Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our multi-county listening area in central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, here with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hi, Paul.
Well, hello, Susan, and hello to all you out there, and thanks for joining us today. Today's program is entirely devoted to entertainments coming up this week and the weekend.
We'll be focusing on four very different events, but what they have in common is that they all involve people in lively ways.
And before we talk with our first guest, why don't you run down the list so that people will stay tuned for all of them?
That's a good idea, Paul. First, we have a rundown on the 11th Storytelling Festival in Story City. Then Paul will have an interview with LaRon Williams, one of the featured storytellers for this year. That will take place September 15th to 17th. Next, there's a feature on the visit of Thomas the Tank Engine to the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad for the next couple of weeks starting on Friday. Poet Jennifer Knox will be on hand to describe the most unusual event in the Maximum Aim series. And we'll give a preview of Fox on the Fairway, a hilarious farce by Ken Ludwig, opening this Friday at the Boone Community Theater.
Well, now, that's quite a full schedule, Susan. Now, I'm happy to welcome Abby Huff, Executive Director from the Story City Greater Chamber Connection.
Hello, Abby. I know our listeners are eager to hear what you have in store for this year's Story Festival. Could you give us a preview?
Yeah, we have a packed weekend, that is for sure. Storytellers are going to be getting into town Thursday afternoon, so tomorrow. And tomorrow evening, we have a sold-out dinner and a story. So both Pippa White and LaRon Williams, who are our storytellers this year, will be doing a little sampling of what kind of stories they do between a great meal that's being catered by Dinners by Dawn. And then on Friday, our tellers are going into the schools. They do this every year, and the schools really enjoy it. So Roland Story will get the chance to hear from both of our tellers. LaRon will be at the elementary school and the high school, and Pippa will be at the middle school. And then Pippa's also going to go out to Timberland and do some stories for them. Then they get a break Friday night. We have decided to expand our Scary Stories event. In past years, we've been doing it at the Carousel, but this year we've moved it to Fairview Lodge, and we've made it bigger and scarier. It's going to be two parts. The first part is kind of your PG-13. We've got local kids, local talent, who are going to be telling some stories starting at 7. And they're going to tell for about 45 minutes to about 7:45. Then we're going to have a break and let kind of those who are a little squeamish and don't really like really scary stuff, we're going to let them leave, and then anybody who wants to stick around or join us at that time can come and sit down. We're having Randa Lejeune. She is a storyteller from the Des Moines area. She runs haunted tours in the Sherman Hill neighborhood. She's going to come in. She's got some brand new material that she's put together for us. And her and Molly Nagel, who is a local artist here in Story City, are going to switch off telling some scary stories. And then Saturday is the jam-packed day. 9 o'clock at the library, Pippa is going to be doing a Storytelling 101, where anybody who is a public speaker, anybody who does any kind of public speaking, we're definitely encouraging them to attend. She's just going to go through some strategies about how to be a better public speaker, what you should do as a public speaker to get your message across to audiences. So, again, she's right away at 9 o'clock at the library. Then LaRon is going to come in at 11 and do his workshop. And his workshop is how to change your story. So it's telling your personal stories and how to make them relevant to today and how it can really impact how your story can impact not only your lives, but the lives that you're telling your stories to. And then they get just a little bit of a break because at 1 o'clock right across the street at the Historic Story Theater, we're going to be doing our combination Story Slam and open mic. We are letting people know Story Slam this year, our kind of our title is Wake Up, so people can start preparing. I think our own Paul Weerson right there is going to be a judge. So that's gonna be fun. You can get up and tell your stories. There'll be a prize for the winner. That's at 1. And then Pippa's going to come back at 3 and do a solo concert about the Orphan Train. If people don't know, the Orphan Train took around 100,000 children from the East Coast to the Midwest in the early part of the 20th century, and she's got a fabulous story that she will tell, and that is at 3 o'clock. So our final concert is at 7 o'clock, and it is a combination of both Laron and Pippa.
And that'll be a great show, and these are two storytellers we've had before, and we brought them back for an encore. And Pippa is a very gifted person who's an actress as well as a storyteller. So when she does The Orphan Train, she does various characters. And Laron, very exotic. He has all kinds of stories that from other cultures and other backgrounds that are fascinating to hear. He's a great performer. And people who are unacquainted with storytelling should know that it's not just a performance, it's an experience. And people who go for the first time, typically husbands dragged by their wives, are pleasantly surprised about what storytelling is as an experience, because it's a real human contact interaction type of activity. When we first did the festival, we did it on a Presidium stage with the studio or the house lights darkened, and that was totally wrong. Storytellers want to be able to see the audience, interact, feed off their reactions. So in the early days, we said this is the 11th festival. We had to learn what storytelling was and how to do it. And we've had some great people. And we want to welcome Abby Huff. She's new with the chamber. And Abby, I hope you're having fun.
I am, and this is a great festival.
Yes, it's going to be great this time.
I think if people haven't attended before, this is a great one to lead off with.
Yeah, it's a great fall activity, and you know we've done it long enough that it has a following. And what I've really interested, what's really interested me over time, is that our audience is not local. We have people coming from Michigan and Des Moines and all sorts of places who are part of the storytelling world. They come to storytelling festivals, so we've lived and learned a lot about storytelling, who our audience is, and how to do the festival. So by now, the Roland Story people are pretty good at putting on a festival. So I'm looking forward to another 11th year. And I am a judge for the Story Slam, so I'm nervous about that, of course. So it's going to be fun. But Abby, I think that you folks have put together another fine festival. And I'm really intrigued by what will happen on Friday night with all the scary stories. And I hope that's not so traumatic that people can't sleep for weeks or something like that.
Yes, if you are squeamish, I recommend you maybe attend something else during the weekend.
And you're involving some youth as performers, is that right, or storytellers?
We are, yes. Yeah, the committee that planned the scary stories have been working with the high school theater department in the speech teacher. So, yep, they've got some great performers.
Well, it's going to be fun. So anything you'd like to ask, Susan, we haven't talked about?
No, I'm just overwhelmed with what your schedule and all the really wonderful things that are going on over in Story City this weekend.
Well, Abby, good luck with the festival, and I'm going to be there, and I hope a lot of other people will be, too. Is there a website or something that people could check out?
people can visit us at storycity.net, and then that's our website, and there's a tab for the Story Festival. Or we have a Facebook page, and that's facebook.com/StoryFestivalSC.
Very good. So Storytelling Festival, the 15th through the 17th this weekend at Story City, Iowa. Story, our 11th year of the Story Festival. Thank you very much, Abby.
Thank you so much. Yes.
Susan, it's going to be fun. And let me tell you, the most fascinating thing for me has been to take the storytellers to the schools, because the kids come in for the assembly, and they have that, especially at the high school level. They have this, oh, no, another assembly, and, oh, at least we're getting out of class, and, oh, do we have to do this? And in 5 minutes, the storyteller has them enthralled, particularly high school boys. They come in surly, you know. And we had this storyteller 1 year from the Appalachian Mountains, and I was just watching this one boy, and he was just looking so surly and unhappy. And in 2 minutes, this man had him rolling in the aisles. Not literally, but he was laughing uncontrollably. And he got his cell phone out and called his mom, whom I know, and said, "This is the greatest thing I've ever seen." And so it's fun to watch that metamorphosis when they come in, not really knowing what to expect, and then they're enthralled. And so storytelling, well, that's the basic human communication. In the caves, we told stories. It was a long time before anyone wrote them down. And now we're going to talk to a storyteller who will be in the festival. In case you just tuned in, this is radio station KHOI Community Radio, and you've been hearing about the events of the 11th Annual Story City Storytelling Festival from Abby Huff. And now I'm fortunate to have one of our featured storytellers, LaRon Williams, on the line. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Well, we go way back. When was the last time you were storytelling in Story City?
You know, I was trying to figure that out this morning. I think it was about 9 years ago, so it's been a while.
Yeah, and I think, in the evening performance, you and I were both storytellers. I remember I was on right before you, and I was glad I was on before you because I would look pretty bad. You have a tremendous presence on stage and also a tremendous message and a way about you. Now, what's your story, LaRon? How did you come to be a storyteller?
Oh, through a series of coincidences. I mean, I didn't know that there was any such thing as a professional storyteller when I first started. But I had been a preschool teacher for 2 years. And during that time, I had always read stories to my kids, and they loved the stories that I read. And over the 2 years, I just learned a few stories without even trying, because they wanted to hear them over and over and over again. So I had this small storehouse of stories inside of me. And through another coincidence, at one point, I had an opportunity to perform for a group of school kids who were stranded in a museum because it was raining and they couldn't get to their school bus.
Well, you had a captive audience.
It truly captive, yeah.
Well, that sounds like you could make a movie out of that.
Less interesting things have been turned into movies.
You're right, LaRon.
Actually, though, that really brings up something to me. You said that you learned the stories because you told them so often. When my children were small, I read a book by a librarian, a storyteller, and she said that children respond so much better to a told story, and that people, teachers, parents, and so forth, should try to learn the stories so that they can tell them as told stories rather than just reading them.
I think that's true. Many, many, many storytellers have acknowledged through time that the craft of storytelling involves so much more sensory output, you know, and kids get to read your emotions, and they get to see your facial expression, and they get to hear your words, of course. But with writing, the only thing that's there is the words on a page. And while writing, of course, can be very powerful and very beautiful, you don't get all those extra dimensions, those other, I call them languages. You don't get the other languages that you get with storytelling.
Well, Ron, tell us about your workshop. You're going to be open to the public to come in and learn some craft from you. It's entitled Changing Our Stories Will Change Our World. You might talk about your workshop. It sounds fascinating.
Yeah, I came upon that notion several years ago when I was asked to do a workshop for the Mid-Michigan Mental Health and Aging Conference. Actually, I was asked to do a keynote address. And in the process of preparing for that keynote address, I realized that there were certain ideas that we routinely conveyed in our folk tales and our stories, but those ideas were not things that people were self-conscious of. They weren't aware of the messages and the ideas. And I thought, you know, we constantly convey these ideas that that teach us certain things, but we're not aware that we're doing that. So if we unconsciously can promote ideas, why can't we consciously promote a different set of ideas? And in this case, I was thinking in particular about ideas that teach us to be afraid of what's different from us and distrustful, ideas about having to go through life as lone individuals, you know, that we can't establish strong connections with each other, that we're in competition with each other. And I thought to myself, you know, those ideas don't work very well. And so why can't we replace them with ideas of cooperation and ideas that we're friends, that we can collectively achieve certain goals?
So if someone comes to that workshop, they're going to be invited to think in different ways and probably reevaluate what they've heard and seen and done in a different context, probably.
Yeah, they're going to be asked to think about how they think, to think about how they think, to be mindful of how they think, to be aware of how they think. And then they're going to be asked to craft stories or a story that allows them to express a different way of thinking.
You know, you could probably make a lot of money working with political consultants, with presidential campaigns, to think a little differently. Well, now, you're going to be in transit to Story City from Michigan, and have you already picked out the stories you're going to tell?
Yes and no. I always have some idea of what I might tell, but I usually wait until I see who the audience is specifically. You know, I take cues from things that people say to me when I arrive at a festival or I arrive in an area. Especially when I go to schools, I get cues from what the kids are doing and how they're behaving and again, things that they might say to me, and then I usually take off from there so that I can address specific situations and specific needs.
Now, I have a question. Where do you find your stories?
You know, kids ask me that all the time.
Well, Susan's very immature. You know.
I have a pat answer to that, so I'll give you the quick answer, and that is that they come from three places. Either I make them up out of whole cloth. I mean, just at 4 o'clock in the morning, sometimes I'll just sit bolt upright in bed, and I have an idea for a story. So either they just come to me, and I make them up, or I read them in books or other sources, readable sources. And if they're folk tales, then I can tell them. If they're not, I have to ask permission to be able to use the story. And that's the third place. I hear other storytellers tell stories or do things, and I say, do you mind if I use that story or a piece of that story? And I have never had anybody say no. They always say, make it better than I made it. And that's one of the wonderful things about the existing storytelling community is it is so supportive, and really it reflects, in many ways, reflects those cooperative values that I was describing earlier.
So that's very, very true. You know, for years I was on the committee that ran the Storytelling Festival, and we've had, and quite a number of storytellers over the years. And I was always impressed with the non-competitive, collaborative way those people behave toward each other and with each other. And I learned that there was a storytelling community that you referred to. And also I learned that how highly interactive storytelling is with an audience, principally when I've taken the storytellers to visit the schools at middle school and high school. I've just been fascinated by their ability to turn on a teenage audience without music. But, Ron, you do a little music too, don't you?
A little. Yeah. I don't call myself a musician, but I do play a variety of percussion instruments as best as I'm able. And I love to incorporate that musical dimension because, as I said earlier, it's another of the languages that we can use to enhance our stories. So I try hard to be a decent musician, but I don't read music and I don't qualify myself as a musician, certainly not in line with some of the greatest musicians, you know.
Well, I've seen your performance and storytelling, and when you do get that involved with percussion and you do incorporate that into your performance, it's very, very effective. And to Middle Western Norwegians, they find you as an exotic person. When I've talked to the kids, when you've done a school appearance, wow, he's in another world, man. So I'd like you to know that these folks think you are kind of special.
Oh, that's always good to hear.
And you're a lot of fun, and I know you're going to be well-received again this year. Certainly, Story City looks forward to seeing you again. And you and Pippa, looking back, have been two of the storytellers that we've had most requested to return to Story City. So that has to say something about both you and Pippa. And, of course, that's exactly what's going to happen this weekend. LaRon Williams and Pippa White will be the storytellers at the Story Festival. And, LaRon, we're looking forward to see you in Story City. And I hope the weather's nice in Michigan. You're about to leave for Story City, right?
I am, and I'm looking forward to being there. It is raining right now.
Oh, it's nice here. It's nice.
Luckily, the weather moves from, it moves from your direction, so I'll drive into good weather.
Yes, it's always west to east, and so we're confident you'll drive into sunshine, and we're confident you'll bring sunshine to Story City, so... Looking forward to it. The Storytelling Festival, LaRon Williams, everybody. A round of applause out there. So, LaRon, have a good trip. We'll see you. Oh, our engineer is applauding, so kind of as a butterfly applause, I'd call it. So, LaRon, we'll see you in Story City, the Storytelling Festival, this weekend at Story City. LaRon Williams and Pippa White. LaRon, have a good journey.
All right. I'll see all of you there soon, too.
Very good. Hey, that was just fun. And storytelling's fun, and it'll be a lot of fun this weekend in Story City.
I'm sure it will. Thank you, LaRon Williams. People who have been intrigued by listening to you should know, especially about that workshop, Changing Our Stories Will Change Our World. I think that's one that is especially appropriate for his purpose, which is to help us to use stories to make a difference. It's at the Bertha Bartlett Library. It's Saturday at 11 a.m. And after this break, we'll come back with Jerry Hyde, Youth Services Manager at the Ames Public Library, who will tell us the story of how Thomas the Tank Engine became a worldwide sensation. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames, and the surrounding area.
tell what train I'm on, so know where I'm gone. When I die, please bury me deep down at the end of old Lincoln Street, so I can hear that number 9 as she goes rolling by. Freight train gone so fast. Freight train gone at last. Please don't tell what train I'm on, so
this is KHOI Community Radio, turning to a discussion of our local visit of Thomas the Tank with Jerry Hyde, Youth Services Manager at the Ames Public Library. Hello, Jerry. Thank you for being with us this morning to give us some background on the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad celebration of Thomas the Tank.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, it sounds like we're going to have a lot of fun with this. I'd like to start, before I ask you to fill us in with your library background, with the introduction of the event that appears on the website of the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway. What is a Day Out with Thomas? Day Out with Thomas is a family event that offers aspiring engineers and their families the unique opportunity to take a ride with the classic storybook engine, Thomas the Tank Engine, at regional heritage railroads across the country. I'd like to point out that Day Out with Thomas is a trademark, a registered trademark, and it is evident from the phrase referring to regional heritage railroads that festivals like this are occurring throughout the country. This has been going on for quite a while. When I called the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad yesterday, they told me that they had been celebrating this since 1998. It's a real tradition. Then they described the appeal of Thomas. Since Thomas the Tank Engine left the depot more than 65 years ago, because, of course, he left long before they started having celebrations in railroads, this really useful engine and his Island of Sodor friends have chugged their way into the hearts of preschoolers and grown-ups worldwide. Based on the railway series of classic stories authored by a father who loved trains and wanted to share the experience with his son, Thomas and Friends is a rite of passage that inspires the imagination while teaching the life lessons of friendship, exploration, and cooperation. And that's the explanation. When the engineers and other railroad workers get ready for 2 weeks of Thomas fans over in Boone, I thought it would be good to get a little background on how the book was written by a British clergyman for his son in 1946 and why that has become so popular for such a long time. Do you have any insight into that question, Jerry?
Well, I think Thomas, because he's a railroad, you know, a train, is very, very popular for the kids because boys or girls just love that big, majestic type of awesome thing that comes on wheels and disappears into the sunset, and they see that happen, and people go in it, and so it's mysterious, and but it's just an awesome thing of wonderment for a child to see, and like the train stories that Reverend Wilbert Audrey was telling his son Christopher, they put it in print, and so many boys and girls can now enjoy that as well. And it was very interesting, too, when I was doing my research with Thomas, that the the father, Reverend Wilbert, had carved the original Thomas the Tank Engine out of a broomstick handle, and then he started telling stories to his son Christopher about this tank engine that he has. So, very interesting beginning.
Oh, do you have any idea how did he use this? Did he use it like a puppet?
Well, it was a wooden toy, so it was like a pull toy. So he, my vision when I'm reading it, we all bring to our story our own things that happen or our own experiences. So my vision of it is that he's sitting at bed at nighttime when his son Christopher is going to bed and is holding the toy in his hand that he had carved the train, and starts telling the story to his son to help him relax and go to bed, like we often tell our kids or read books to our children so they can relax and get focused for the evening of going to bed and getting rest for the evening. So that's my interpretation of how I think it came to be and how the wooden toy was used.
It occurs to me that, as was mentioned earlier, it's appealing to both boys and girls. And I think that is a problem sometimes for people who are selecting books for children to find books that boys will really like.
Right. Typically, girls will read anything, and boys are our hardest customers to find that exact book for the exact child at the right time. So, yes, you are totally correct with that. So Thomas does appeal to that mechanical side of our male thinkers. And, of course, we have lots of female thinkers that think on the mechanical side as well. But I also think, that mysteriousness of, this big, huge thing comes far away, and then it gets big and huge, and then it goes away and gets very, very small again. And that energy that it brings is part of the enticement for our children.
Well, I was over at the library on Saturday, and I could see what a nice collection of things you have there. You don't have any of the toys or trains, though, do you? The ones that can be purchased online.
No, we do not have any of Thomas, but we do have the full series, several copies of the full series of books in our library book bins under Thomas the Tank Engine, under the character's name. So you can find a whole bin, a couple bin fulls if they're all in, but typically that's not the case. Usually there's just a bin and a browsing bin that boys and girls can find all the titles. Since they started based on the series, the TV series, not necessarily the original books.
And you do have the DVDs, so people can see all of the TV series, too, I guess.
Correct. And the stories that you see are and the illustrations are done by the TV series, so it's more based on the majority of the stories that we have are based on the TV series and the conversations and the storyline of that. Because originally, Thomas was not necessarily the main character of the Grey Wolf books. He didn't appear until, I believe, it was the second book. And the second book called The Three Railway Engines. And then he appeared, from the story Thomas and Gordon. He was introduced as a tank engine who lived at Big Station. He had six small wheels, a short, stumpy funnel, a short, stumpy boiler, and a short, stumpy dome. He was a fussy little engine, always pulling coaches about. He was cheeky, too. So it's my understanding that he wasn't always, the word arrogant has been used in describing him in the original part, but when he became more of the focus, the children really enjoyed him the most of the whole grouping of trains, and so that kind of brought him out. And then they, once the series on television was there created, they made him a more kid-friendly, happier tank engine than he was originally.
Well, obviously, they were very successful with that, and I'm sure there'll be lots and lots of action at the library in connection with this coming event over in Boone at the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway. And there's always a lot going on at the library. Our next guest is not in your division, I don't think, but she will be in the auditorium. She's Jennifer Knox, and I don't know whether you know her, but she's part of what your library offers the community.
Right, in our adult services area. We have two people. Mary is my counterpart in the adult area, and I'm sure that's who has created or worked with that program.
Well, thank you so much for being with us this morning, Jerry.
Not a problem.
Jerry Hyde from the Children's Department at the Ames Public Library, and we have now with us someone who will be part of Maximum Ames, Jennifer Knox.
Hi.
English instructor, and
yes.
And I think there is so much here. I would like to just have you tell us what's going
on. All right. About the event on Friday?
The event on Friday,
okay.
Yes.
6:30 at the Ames Public Library, we're going to be having a launch party for Iowa Bird of Mouth. Iowa Bird of Mouth is a crowdsourced poetry project that lives online. I was recently made an Iowa Arts Council Fellow for the project, and I'm very, very honored and very grateful for the fellowship. And if you go to iowabirdofmouth.com, you'll go to the website and you can see what the project is. We have a different spotlight Iowa bird every month, and this month we've started the project with a goldfinch. And anyone could go to the website and contribute 300 words a day to the crowdsourced poem. And if you like, you can also add your name to the contributors list. And your verse will appear in the poem in the order that you put it in. And it's very exciting. We're seeing a lot of people contributing to it right now. It's very, very fun.
It certainly sounds like fun.
It is.
It's really a way to involve people with poetry.
It's a way to engage the community and give people a space to be creative and to contribute their words and feelings about birds.
So what are you doing to launch this on Friday evening?
On Friday at the Ames Public Library, 6:30, we're going to have an event. We have five readers, myself included. We also have Heather Dare Smith. She's a wonderful poet from Des Moines. She has three books. Her latest one is Tongue Screw, and she has another one coming out next year called Thrust from Persia Books. Meg Johnson, who was born and raised in Ames, and her second book, The Crimes of Clara Turlington, won the Vignette Collection Award. And recently, her nonfiction work has appeared in Bust and Ms. Magazine. And Claire Kreusel, who is a creative writing and environment graduate from the graduate program over at Iowa State. She recently published a poem in Fracture, which is an anthology about fracking from Ice Cube Press. And later that night at the Maximum Ames Festival, Claire is going to be performing at the Nova Lab Showcase with Jordan Mayland and the Thermal Detonators. So she's running from our event to that event because there's so much going on in Ames that night. And we also have for a reader Molly McDonald. She is, her bio says, an Iowa native with a bunch of college degrees and pretty big muscles. And she's a fabulous, wonderful poet. And she is going to, I think, be reading new work. And I know we're all going to have our books there available for people to look at and purchase if they'd like. And also Tyler Harms, who is the director of Iowa Young Birders, who helped us, who put together the list of birds for Iowa Bird of Mouth. He chose the birds. We wanted to make sure that they were representative of birds in the environment at that time of year. So we have a different bird every month, and he put together the list, and he said it was the hardest thing he had ever done.
Why?
Because there are so many great birds out there, and he had to pick one. It was like Sophie's Choice, but for birders. So I can't wait to hear him talk about it. And afterwards, we're all going to be reading from the poem. And together, everyone in attendance, we're going to write a verse and then upload it to the poem right there at the library.
So that's real crowdsourcing.
That's real crowdsourcing with a real crowd. Hopefully we'll get a lot of people out for it.
What an unusual way to approach poetry.
It's very, very fun to and very enriching to be able to provide the space for people to contribute to a project that of this size. I got the idea from Juan Felipe Herrera, who's the poet laureate, and he had a similar project on the Library of Congress's website called La Familia. And every month he had a different topic, all under the umbrella theme of family. And thousands of people contributed to La Familia. And it was so inspiring that when I had the opportunity to put together a project for the fellowship, that really resonated with me.
So you've never done anything like this before, though.
I've never done anything like this before.
And already things are happening.
Already things are happening. People, I can't tell you what a thrill it is to wake up in the morning and look at the contributors list and see names of people I don't know and see new verses on the poem. It's just terrific.
Now, I have all kinds of fantasies about an older generation, you know, someone from another era participating. I have a dream that Edgar Allan Poe would do the first verse, and then you open it up for everyone to get weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, getting weird. That's really key. There's so many great crowdsourcing poetry projects out there. David Lehman, who's the editor of Best American Poetry, he was doing one for Scholarly American where they were crowdsourcing lines and sonnets, and people would vote on what the next line was going to be, and hundreds of people would submit what the next line is, and some of them would rhyme, and some of them wouldn't, and some of them would be just way out in left field, and some would just really bring the sonnet together. But they were so much fun to watch as they came together.
Is there some – I bet there are psychologists who are studying this process.
Crowdsourcing? I'm sure they are. It really expands what – our idea of community is, and collaboration, and who can be a part of it. We are just opening it up, just blowing the doors off.
Wow, this is amazing.
Yes. Thanks.
Well, everyone thinks of literary things as being so solo and
they do
at the desk and something you do alone.
Mm-hmm.
And here we're
that it's
integrating
an I
everybody.
Thing and not a we thing.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's
the unique thing about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I have that fantasy about Edgar Allan Poe and
yes.
all these people coming out of the woodwork.
And just throwing it in there.
Yeah.
I met at one of the events for the Iowa Arts Council. I recently met a visual artist, Heidi Wren. Oh, I forgot her last name. She's fabulous. She lives in Iowa City. And she recently contributed her grandmother's writing from her grandmother's journal to the poem. Because her grandmother made lists. She was a big birder. And she would journal about what she bought at the grocery store and the birds she had seen. So Heidi was able to put some of her grandmother's words in the poem. And she signed under the contributors list her grandmother's name.
Wow.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Well, it's
Heidi Wyron Bartlett. Thank you very much. Yes.
Evan pulled that up like magic
like
on the screen.
Boom. Thank
this
you,
is a
Evan.
Wonderful era we're living in.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. If there's a theme this morning, it's the crossover mm-hmm. in arts and
technology.
Technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really is expanding what we can do.
I was interested. I saw that the grant was for getting your web page up.
It was it's a fellowship that I could have chosen anything to be the project.
Mm-hmm.
So it is for the it's for me and the yeah. for the Iowa Bird of Mouth project. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But it's obviously it's a lot of work to do that. Did you do that technologically, or did you have a webmaster?
No, I had a web developer. I know basic web design, but structurally, the format for the site was far beyond anything I could do because it has to take these submission fields and load them into other spots on the site and take the contributors' names and put them here, and it has to have very high profanity filters on it because we're asking our contributors to refrain from profanity. We're trying to get school groups to use it. People have to sign permission that the text can be used for by other artists. So this is far beyond my technical expertise.
But some of those problems are the problems we have on the radio.
Yes. Yes, that's true.
So Bird of Mouth, it's
Bird
called.
Of Mouth. Bird Iowa of Bird Mouth. Of Mouth. If you go to www.iowabirdofmouth.com.
And to get the real send-off, come to the Ames Public Library at 6:30 this Friday.
You're going to hear some poems about birds and hear Tyler talk about his Sophie's Choice selection process. And you get a chance to contribute to the poem.
You can't beat that.
Can't beat it.
Well, thank you. We've been talking
with
Jennifer Knox, who is the fellow for the
Iowa Arts Council.
Uh-huh.
And the curator.
And the curator.
I call myself the curator. What do you think?
The curator.
That sounds curative.
Thank you.
The curator.
Curative, what ails you?
Bird of Mouth.
Yes.
And you're an English lecturer at Iowa State.
I am.
So you're gainfully employed.
Yes.
As well as publishing a great deal. I guess I saw the New Yorker and a number of journals that I...
Mm-hmm. I have some books, yes.
Yes, four books, isn't it?
Four books. Mm-hmm.
Well, so
we'll have to have you back.
Yes, I'd love to come back. Yeah. I love KHOI.
Well, thank you so much for being with us this morning. We'll end our program with one more activity for this weekend, one in Boone. We have an interview with Homie Simmons and Corianne Westfold, co-director and co-producer of Boone Community Theater's production of Ken Ludwig's Fox on the Fairway, described as a hilarious romp which pulls the rug out from underneath the stuffy denizens of private country clubs. Filled with mistaken identities, slamming doors, and over-the-top romantic shenanigans, it's a furiously paced comedy that recalls the Marx Brothers classics, a charmingly madcap adventure about love, life, and man's eternal love with golf. Last week, we had Homie Simmons and Corianne Westfold in to talk about the Boone Community Theater season that was being introduced at the Puffer Billy Days Parade. And their first production of the year is opening this Friday.
Friday, September 16th at 7 p.m. is our opening night. And also Saturday, the 17th at 7 p.m. Then the 23rd at 7, shows Saturday, September 24th, 2 p.m. and 7 p.m.
How do people find this?
Well, we are located at 106 South Webster Street in Boone, Iowa. Some of the old Boone folks know it as the old Garfield School, but Boone Community Theater bought it about 12 years ago, and we are making it into a community center. One area of it is our theater.
Tell us about this show.
Oh, Ken Ludwig's Fox on the Fairway. It was written as a classic English farce in the same style that they were in like 1880s and then got very popular in the 1920s and 30s and 40s. And so it is definitely a comedy. It is more of what you might consider an adult comedy.
The set is a private country club.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is it English and all that?
No, it's actually...
set kind this of in today's
so it's updated for today.
Oh, it is present. Definitely.
This so
is
no one has to do British day. Accents or anything.
No,
like that.
No. In fact, it's become very popular in the UK because I think they get to make fun of Americans.
Is that right?
That's true.
Oh, it's a lot of fun to make fun of
that's
Americans.
That's right. The Quail Valley Country Club. One of the reasons why we chose this play is because we really wanted something that was just going to be fun for the people that have been working so hard at the theater. Mm-hmm. For a long time and to get some new people in. And this one specifically is set in present day, so we don't have to do period costumes. And also, Quail Valley Country Club really is just very adaptable in the way that it's really just kind of a reflection of whatever country club in any town USA. And so it really can be set just about anywhere in
That's
the U.S.
Wonderful. How large is your cast for the show?
The cast is only 6 people. It is 3 males and 3 females, of course, with a few other extras, bit parts, voice parts, things like that.
Well, and our techies are actually going to be called caddies, and so we're dressing up as caddies, and we're getting to go on
first,
and intermingling and trying to move set and stuff while we're
That's right. Usually
being
caddies. Usually we dress our ninjas in black, but we figured this was Homie's idea, a really neat idea to just dress them like caddies and have them be as bright and colorful as
and
possible.
So they, like, they belong, but they have a function in terms of physically managing the stage.
Yes. That's right. That's right.
Now, just to let people know, a lot of people don't realize what goes on in production of a community theater production. Take us back into when rehearsals began for this.
Rehearsals started in the beginning of August. And it was really nice, I have to say, and we vied hard for this specific spot in the season because we would be able to come in earlier than usual because there's a gap during the summertime after the children's production before the next season starts. And so since I had not been in the director's seat solo before, and Homie and I have never flown alone, so to speak, just the two of us, we thought, we'll do this one and we'll have plenty of time, and we were able to get a jump on the set, and we were very ambitious with those goals, and it's nearly done now. I'm really happy that we chose this script because it is absolutely hilarious. I've heard these jokes now 100 times over, and I can't stop laughing because the actors that we have, they're just awesome people, very, very good actors, and they throw something new in it every single time.
So it's The Fox and the Fairway coming to Boone Community Theater this weekend, beginning the 16th.
Mm-hmm.
And the 16th, 17th, and?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then the 23rd and 24th, and we will have 2 shows on the 24th, a matinee and a 7 p.m.
Well, that's great. Now, is there a website for
Community Theater? Can go to www.boonecommunitytheater.org. And you can also check us out on Facebook.
Correct.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you
very much.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Susan Franzen and Paul Wearson. We started the show with Abby Huff introducing the 11th Story City Festival, followed by an interview with LaRon Williams, one of the featured storytellers. Next, we discussed the upcoming visit of Thomas the Tank Engine to the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad with Jerry Hyde, Youth Services Manager at the Ames Public Library. Poet Jennifer Knox described crowdsourced poetry at an unusual event at Maximum Ames. We ended with a preview of Fox on the Fairway, a farce opening this Friday at the Boone Community Theater, discussed by Homie Simmons and Corianne Westfold.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m., and you can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Thanks to Ron Carson for taking care of the technical details of these posts and information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. And you can like us on Facebook. Get updates on all our show postings in your news feed.
Local Talk was engineered by Evan Taylor. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Freight Train is also from that album.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878, and that's 515-292-2878, or contact us through our website at khoifm.org.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again
on the radio.